Glenn Beck.
So the U.S. Air Force does a lot of things well, but data entry apparently is not one of them. On Tuesday, the Air Force said that it found dozens of cases in which it failed to enter servicemen who had been convicted of a crime into the National Criminal Information Center database. Why is this important? Well, you'll recall that the gunman who killed 26 people in Sutherland Springs earlier this month was a former Air Force serviceman who had spent a year in military prison for assaulting his wife and threatening to kill his stepson. The Air Force admitted that his conviction had not been entered into the National Background Check database. If his name had been in the database, it may have prevented him from being able to purchase a gun. Instead, he passed all of his background checks and bought guns over the past 2 years. Now the Air Force is doing an internal review of 60,000 cases that reach back to 2002, and they say they're correcting several dozen records that should have been reported to the national database. The full review is going to take several months. The Air Force negligence here is really, truly staggering. The idea that they found, oh, look at here, another case, dozens, where they failed to register convicted servicemen. And that's just what they found so far and what they're telling us about. And that's just one branch of the military. What about all the other branches? What about all the state and federal agencies? How much more negligence is out there? Enforcing the laws we already have is imperative. But if we can't even depend on the Air Force for due diligence in this area, then we have a serious problem. Can we come together on something we can agree on, redoubling our efforts across the board to enforce the gun laws that are in place now? We have to be better than this. Because every time that we're not, we chip away at all of our constitutional freedoms.
It's Thursday, November 30th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Adam Foss is the founder and executive director of Prosecutor Impact, a guy who never thought he was going to be a prosecutor. I love this. You're so honest. You got into law. You went to law school for?
Money.
My money. I love that. And then you started seeing how the system really worked, and you thought, this is broken. This is really bad. You want to explain?
First, thank you for getting into this conversation. It's an important one that we need to be having and should be something that we're talking about more often than we already do. When I walked into a courthouse for the first time in a city and saw a literal and figurative divide between the people who were constantly impacted by the criminal justice system and those people who were enforcing it, who were prosecuting, who were defending, who were judging, who were probating, the divide and the sort of tone deafness and the patriarchy of those folks, you could see the impact, the negative impact happening in the moment. And yet we would tell ourselves that this is a great system, this is working, it's punishing people, it's teaching them lessons, it's creating safer communities, was a falsity. And so that's what drove me into the criminal justice system and the work that I continue to do today.
So you're a prosecutor now. And you had a guy, I think Christopher was his name, right?
Yeah.
That came in front of you as a prosecutor, and you had a choice. Tell me about this.
Christopher was a young person who made a series of really bad judgments and stole a bunch of laptops from his part-time job and sold them for a lot of money. And he was going to use that money to apply for college. And it's something that we don't talk enough about, is how people many times commit crime out of necessity or perceived necessity. He came in, a young black man, who was charged with 30 counts of felony larceny. And just the appearance of those things on his criminal record would have doomed him for life. A young black man from my neighborhood being charged with 30 counts of theft, you're not getting employed anywhere.
Yeah.
And so at that point in time where I had to decide what to do with the case.
Because that's what the DA does. I mean, the DA decides what the charges are, how you're going to handle it. I mean, you're one guy, so one bad guy can make a whole bunch of bad decisions. One good guy can make a lot of good decisions.
Yeah.
So you're in the you're looking at him, and you're like, what are we going to do? And how did you balance justice and mercy?
Yeah. Justice, to me, and for people who are in our justice system, needs to be accounting for everything about that person and not just what does the law say and what happened. And what will happen to them if we go down this road? Is it just that this young man, because he made this decision based on his own calculation, should never get a job again? And what is that going to do to us? Is that going to make us a safer society if this kid is now 25 and unemployed? And
right.
So when considering what justice is, you need to be thinking about all of these things in context. And for me, the context was we still have the ability to teach this kid a lesson, which was ultimately what the justice system was built for. But we don't need to do so in a way that is purely punitive. And hopefully we'll have a better outcome than sending him to jail.
So it this particular case did have a better outcome. Explain the outcome.
So we worked together, and he worked with community-based organizations to get himself into school. He did community service. He repaid what he had stolen from the store. He got back laptops that he had stolen because he had tracked down the people on the internet that he sold them to. And then I lost track of him, which is actually a good thing in the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing never to see people again. Until, 6 or 7 years later, I'm at a professional men's event, men of color in the city of Boston. And this kid approaches me, and it's the young man from court. And I didn't recognize him. He was a grown man at this point. And he had a very well-paying job in Boston. He owned a home. He had a child that is going to not live in poverty. And so all of these things were the result of decisions that I, as one prosecutor with the help of other colleagues, made. And we have the ability to do that every single day. People could be doing it right now.
So I don't think anybody would disagree with the intent.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what the justice system is for, to correct behavior. And if behavior can't be corrected, then just take them off the streets.
Right.
However, we're living in a time now where, man, I've really lost faith in the justice system. I've always believed that justice was, that it pretty much worked out. I don't believe that anymore. And I think it has been kind of a lie that I've lived my whole life. It may be the best system in the world, but it still sucks.
Yeah.
But we're also living in a time where people, they're not held accountable for anything.
Yeah.
So how do you balance that?
Accountability is a funny word that we use in the criminal justice system. As prosecutors, we use it all the time. I'm holding this person accountable. And for the suggestion that if I do something on December 1st, 2016, and then we litigate my responsibility for that thing for the course of a year or 18 right. months, and then at the end of that thing, we either try the case or you plead out to that, which actually mitigates your responsibility in the action. We call that accountability. And we only call that accountability because hundreds and hundreds of years ago, some white guys sitting around a table were like, this is how we're going to do it. We didn't measure it and validate it and say, yes, this actually brings about accountability. We just said punishment equals accountability, and we've just done that forever. And so where the criminal justice system fails is by exchanging punishment for actual accountability. And with Christopher, and Christopher is one example of thousands and thousands of people that I had the privilege to work with when I was a prosecutor. For Christopher, accountability wasn't about getting a criminal record and going to jail and being deprived of his future. Mm-hmm. Accountability was about every day him doing something that reminded him of the harm that he caused. Christopher, you're going to write essays about what you did. And I know that sounds sort of ethereal and trite, but...
No, with some people it would work. With some people it would work.
It works. You'd be amazed at how many people it works with. To actually talk about harm and let that person talk about why they created that harm and understand the gravity and depth of that harm and then work to repair that harm. That's accountability.
So, because doesn't it seem, though, I mean, because I think the argument would be, isn't everybody who steals a bunch of laptops now going to come up in front of you and say, hey, I needed them for college and I'm going to turn things around. And eventually, if you let me go, I'm going to be a high paid person in Boston and it's all going to work out well. How can you balance that? Do you have to judge each specific case and just try to figure it out? Does everyone get the same amount of chances? The law obviously is supposed to treat everyone the same way. How do you navigate that?
Well, first, it's the fundamental principle that the law is supposed to treat everybody the same way. We know it's a falsity.
But we want to work towards that, right? Yeah.
We do. Yeah. But in the time that we do, the people who suffer the most from that fallacy are our most marginalized people. And so,
and you would put marginalized in anybody who can't afford it, right?
Can't afford it.
I mean, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter your skin color. It's all about. It really is all about money.
It is. It's about money. It's about socioeconomic status. It's about your capital and how much you are worth to the 1%, basically. Stu, to your question, sure, lots of people might say, "Hey, you know, I should get a break too." And as a society, we need to start asking ourselves, like, if young poor black kids are coming up to me and saying I stole laptops because I was poor, then maybe each case should get an individual look and say, I hear you. And we have some responsibility for creating that situation. So as a society, we need to be prepared to say, yeah, we're going to give you a bunch of chances. Because guess what? Everybody sitting at this table got a million. Everybody that is in Washington or in the media right now that suddenly are losing their jobs, that was after hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of infractions that we just looked aside. The place where there's the most amount of sexual violence, the most amount of physical violence, the most amount of drug use, the most amount of cheating and stealing is not in, you know, the impoverished neighborhoods of Detroit and Chicago and Boston. It's on college campuses. And as a society, we are okay with that because we know that at some point this young person will grow out of this behavior, they will be successful, and most of that hopefully will stop. Mm.
So you got into it for the money, then you left and you became a DA, and now you are trying to educate DAs all around the country to what exactly?
It's not even to, I guess it is to educate them, but not in the sense that I know more than them. It is a tragedy what we deprive lawyers of when they want to go and do public service in law school. I didn't come out of law school prepared to be a prosecutor making really, really important decisions about people's lives because I didn't understand a thing about those people's lives.
Yeah,
I didn't know anything about the collateral consequences of convictions or even arraigning a person. I didn't know that if you were arraigned for a drug selling drugs in the city of Boston, just arraigned, not convicted, that you could lose your public housing. And not just you, but everybody on the lease. So if you are accused of selling drugs because you are poor to make money, the response of the justice system is to remove you from your public housing and make it to teach you a lesson. How is that making us safer?
So it might make it more likely to go back to that behavior.
And so
because it's the classic story of Jean Valjean.
Yes.
That, you know, you have your yellow ticket of leave. And if you don't have your yellow ticket of leave, well, then, you know, I got to present it. But if I present it, I ain't getting a job.
Right. And so unfortunately, law schools aren't trying to reinvent sort of the way that they teach people, especially people who want to do this kind of work. We shouldn't be learning about wills and trusts and estates. I learned that for a test. I took the test and I've forgotten it all by now. But my first day of work outside of law school, I went into a courtroom and I was being asked to decide whether or not somebody should go to jail because they might not return to court. I knew nothing about crime or behavior or poverty or what happens when you go to jail. In fact, lots of people that I worked around had never been into a jail or prison on our first day of work.
Do you watch the show? This is on Netflix. It's about
BoJack Horseman.
No. It's about the FBI when they first started looking into serial killers, and everybody said these guys.
Oh, Mindhunter.
Yeah, Mindhunter.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
You should watch it.
Okay.
They were they were called, you know, crazy, and they were just trying to babysit people like Charlie Manson, and they're like, no. We need to listen to them and understand them.
Yes.
Because maybe we can catch them. Maybe we can change this behavior before it happens. And it wasn't popular in the 1970s. You kind of feel like that?
Yeah. To me, it's crazy that formerly incarcerated people aren't employed by DA's offices. Here we are, these very privileged people that have never been, you know, maybe once in a while we've been the victim of a crime, and that makes us feel like we're in a better position to do these things. But the most I've learned about the criminal justice system came from young, like, kids that I prosecuted. This one kid who I asked him what he was thinking when he committed a serious armed robbery told me, "Do you actually think that I left my house contemplating whether or not I would go to prison because I was going to rob these guys for money to give to my mother?" And he said to me one of the most profound things I've ever heard. He's like, "You are in the land of the living. The criminal law is for the land of the living. We are surviving." 17 years old, fifth grade reading level. The most important education I ever got in the criminal justice system. And it wasn't from my $150,000 education.
Mm.
And for those of us, again, who think that we are better than because we go to college, we go to law school, we get these degrees, that we should be meeting out justice and deciding what is safe for communities and not including people from those communities in those conversations is asinine.
How do people find you, Adam? How do people join you and find out more about, you're on, you know, your TED Talk is popular and very, very good.
Thank you.
But if people wanted to reach out.
Yeah. Prosecutorimpact.com is the website about my nonprofit that now is going around doing trainings around the country of prosecutors. Adam John Foss is my social media, everything. And I want to hear from people. I want people engaged in this conversation because we need to have an even broader conversation than, you know, I enjoy that people bring up Christopher all the time. I used the Christopher story because I knew it wouldn't turn people off right away. But if we are being honest with each other about what we're going to do about mass incarceration, about the criminal justice system, we need to start talking about violent crime. We need to parse out serial killers and serial rapists from young black and brown men and women who are shooting and killing each other because of intergenerational poverty and trauma. If we really, really mean it as a country that we are embarrassed about this thing, then we have to have real conversations about
and
that.
And you're not looking just for a bunch of yes people to that just agree with you and butt kiss. You want to be challenged.
Yeah, I don't want to go. I don't enjoy going to preach to the choir and everybody standing ovation. That's great. That's not doing anything for the system. And in fact, a lot of the rooms that I go to where people are, you know, cheering and rah, 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 as soon as the suggestion is, well, to solve this problem, you're going to have to give up a little bit of yours, conversation's over. So you talk about all the people who are like, yeah, close Rikers, close Rikers, close Rikers. As soon as the idea was put out in the air that if we close Rikers down, we'll put five jails in each of the boroughs. And because of zoning, those jails will have to go
where you live.
People are like,
no.
That's Rikers, expand Rikers, expand Rikers.
Adam, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Adam Foss.
To the Glenn Beck Program.
If you're not watching the show on the Blaze TV, if you're not a subscriber, you need to become one. Every day, 5 o'clock, we do a show, and we're doing the chalkboard and doing them in a different way. We're breaking big ideas down, and then we'll do a series of four. This week it was Deep State, and the fourth episode is happening tonight at 5 o'clock, and you don't want to miss it. You can binge on them if you're a subscriber at theblaze.com/TV. But this one is about the deep state. And it's fascinating because we hear, you know, it's the deep state. And you think of, you know, the star chamber and everything else. We do have a deep state problem here in America, but it is not the star chamber kind of deep state. And it's important that you know the difference between the two and you know how to stop it. And this one can be stopped, but it takes all of us. And I would suggest that it would take all of us to vote for people that don't want to send photos of their junk to other people.
Well, you've just eliminated half the population.
Apparently
least.
So.
More
except
than
in
half.
This, except in this room. I am under no impression at all that women want to see my junk. No, I even if I were wildly in shape, I don't believe that women would want to see the junk. I don't know why guys keep sending pictures of their junk to people, but that's what apparently happened with Matt Lauer is He sent pictures of himself or parts of him or a specific part of him to a woman, and she kept it.
And then that's what she showed Monday night to NBC management.
So that's why it went so fast.
So that's why they were able to fire him so fast.
Now, were they did they give him an opportunity to have a lineup or anything?
I don't think that's how it works.
I don't know. I'm having a hard time recognizing because they all look alike. That's what I don't understand is, yeah, I've got the most attractive penis on earth.
I don't know.
She's going to love it when I send this. Here's a surprise. They're not attractive. It's not good to look at. Okay, they all look alike.
Yeah, it's not. The light should be off.
Yes.
And it's just,
yes.
It's not a good thing.
For darkness. The male anatomy is an argument for darkness.
It really is.
It's interesting. There's nothing we talk about that makes me feel older than when you hear these conversations about how, oh, this person sexted a picture of their junk to this woman. Why on earth would you think that's when did that start? Now, Lauer's older than us. He's 60?
Yeah, 60, 62, somewhere in there.
And what on earth would possess you to think it was a good idea as a you're making $26 million a year. You're one of the most well-known people in America to sext a picture of your junk to some woman.
Dumb thing to do.
No, you thought Martha Stewart was dumb trying to save 60 grand.
Yeah.
He just wanted to show his junk to somebody. Yeah, right. I mean, how stupid is that?
So weird. So,
and I really don't understand it. And then, I mean, guys, listen, Victoria's Secret, okay?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It's really just for the guys. The girls, the women don't necessarily love it, okay? It's for us. Mm-hmm. So there's a reason there's not a Victor's Secret, okay? They don't want to see it.
Well, let me run this theory by you. Pat and I, when you were out yesterday, kind of discussed this a little bit. I think guys do this because they think that's what they want, right? Remember every really bad penthouse letter from back in the day? It always started with guys would just walk over. They'd be delivering pizza. They'd walk over to somebody's house.
I never thought these stories were true
until it happened to me. Right? And they walked it like, you know, you walk into someone's house for a meeting and the unbelievably hot boss walks out in her underwear. Like, guys think that's awesome. But women don't think John Conyers walking out in his underwear is awesome. Is it possible that guys are just trying to, you know,
they think
this would be a positive when it is not?
Do you think women would find that awesome with any male?
Like if you're, you know, Brad Pitt in his prime.
You're walking out in your underwear.
Well, I was just seeing a video online that was posted of NBC apparently at the Olympics in Rio and trotting out this guy. I think it was a Tonga and he was in the lineup.
Yeah.
And he came out and he's all oiled up and glistening and his body is amazing. And they're just, the whole interview, they're just rubbing their hands all over his chest and back during the interview. They're just multiple women walking up to the guy and just rubbing their hands all over his body. Now, this is the same organization, of course, as firing people left and right for various levels of sexual harassment. Now, he doesn't seem to be opposing it, but isn't there a power structure there? Does the guy from Tonga have the same power as NBC anchors? Aren't they put in this matriarchal society that we've structure?
Power structure. I mean, imagine Tonga. You're the guy from Tonga, and you're going to say something to the women of NBC, and you're going to turn NBC against Tonga?
You can't turn
you
them,
can't
down,
turn
like
them
that.
Down like that.
They're too powerful. I mean, these same arguments can be made.
They could be made.
I think.
But everybody knows that guys aren't necessarily opposed to that.
He didn't look like he was opposed to it in the footage.
I mean, if you're...
You can't assume, though. You can't assume.
You can't assume. And again, even if they are, this is the standard set with Louis C.K. Louis C.K. And who's the other one?
Still in trouble.
The other day, the same. Al Franken in the interview from last night, where he says, "My intent doesn't matter. It just matters what they feel about the experience."
That's not true.
Louis C.K. said, "I never did anything that they didn't agree to, but I should have known because I was admired and a powerful comedian that they couldn't say no to my question
that's
we wanted to." Because they had
no
power of consent.
No,
and it's interesting because Lauer has one of his accusers is similar. It goes beyond what Louis C.K. did. But in September, Lauer asked that's not the right one. So two of the accusers have come forward since all of this broke. Mm-hmm. And one of them claims that Lauer summoned her to his office for sex. And she told the New York Times she, quote, felt helpless because she didn't want to lose her job. So you did have sex with him? You're not helpless. Whether you felt it or not, you don't have to say yes.
Well, hang on just a second.
It's
really an interesting dynamic in this.
It is.
We've taken away the agency from women. They're not allowed to say no. Allowed to make those decisions.
If the power structure looks the other way, they don't really have a choice. I mean,
if they lose their job.
Yeah, yeah. If they want to keep their job, if they value their job
over this experience,
then they do. Now,
but if that's the case, years later, is it okay to come forward and say he raped me? It was consensual, or you at least negotiated the price, which apparently was your job, or you just assumed you negotiated the price. I think a lot of times that's implied. It's not even spoken.
Because if it's spoken, it's outwardly criminal.
Then it is
a huge violation.
But if you're just assuming you feeling helpless, that's not the same thing as being helpless. I think I'm more of a feminist than some of these women are. I think they're stronger than this.
Yeah. We talked about this a little bit yesterday, Glenn, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this.
Not sure. Hang on just a second. I'm just pondering what Pat said. I do believe that's true now. I'm not sure that was true 5 years ago.
But this is how we were talking about this a little bit yesterday. If Tanya had a job, and she worked at an organization, and the most powerful man in the company, you really needed the money, couldn't lose that job. The most powerful man in the company came to her and said, "Look, we're going to have sex right now." Didn't say anything about the job, and she felt
and he would be dead.
Right. And if she did it, you'd be pissed at him for sure. But you'd also be more pissed at her.
Oh, I'd be more pissed at her.
If it was my wife, I'd be more pissed.
I'd be like,
at her.
That's not as important. You know better than that. That's not important to me. Your job and the money is not important to me.
Right. Yeah. So it's interesting because what the media is implying about these cases is essentially these women are making a cost benefit analysis in which they're putting up their sexual lives at a lower priority than advancement in their career.
Yeah.
And that is a quite an accusation to make against these women.
Yes. However, we're looking at it from the side of Pat, if I would have told you 2 months ago that 40 names and some of the biggest names in the industry, in Hollywood and in news and entertainment, 40 of the biggest names have been fired because of being sexual predators. Would you have believed me?
No.
No.
Probably
no way.
No.
No way.
No.
So not only that we would have never thought that they would have actually gone through with it, but also I am shocked at the number of guys that are doing this. You know, the guys you think, you know, Matt Lauer, I may disagree with him, but I don't think he's a predator. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And he's doing this.
And then you find out he is.
Like Anthony Weiner, we all knew that was going on. Not because we'd ever heard a specific rumor, but just because he was so slimy, you just assumed it was occurring.
Yeah, okay. You know? So we're looking at this, not having this experience at all, and seeing this stuff now going, this is going on for women, especially in those industries. It's been going on for a very long time.
Sure.
And, you know, the casting couch has been going on for a very long time. And if there's no one up above, you know, imagine when Roger Ailes was the guy and you knew that Rupert Murdoch was getting $1 billion a year because of Roger Ailes. You think he's going to believe you? You think anything's going to matter to you? No, take the money and shut up.
But there's a level of that argument, and I understand and I agree, generally speaking, but there's a level of that argument that is saying you should choose this horrible incident.
I'm not saying that.
just to make sure you keep your job.
Yeah, there's worse things than losing your job.
That choice should never be presented to a woman ever. It shouldn't.
Or
obviously,
a man.
We all know that. Or a man. But we know that it has happened.
Too often.
And we shouldn't assume that, they didn't have a choice. They had to have sex with them. Like, no, you don't. And how many people, we talked about this yesterday, how many people were affected, by someone like this, especially with like the Weinstein stuff. You talked about this on Pat Gray Unleashed, I think it was 2 days ago, about the woman who said, I had sex with Harvey Weinstein to get this role.
Right.
So, A, how many people, because she never reported that at the time and never talked about it at the time, how many people did that happen to afterwards?
Many.
And secondarily, who's the woman that should have had that role in the movie that didn't get it because this woman decided to have sex with Harvey Weinstein? Right? Like somebody else is affected there. The person in the, when you have the celebrity who wants to try out for the major leagues, there's someone who actually deserves to get the tryout that doesn't get the tryout.
But that's what they're that's what you're thinking. If you are in a place, let's say Fox News or NBC or Weinstein, where if the guy at the top wants to have sex with you and you don't, there's a whole line of women that will. Then you have to decide who you are.
Yeah,
and
that's
that's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. You shouldn't decide that. But what I'm concerned with is not the ones who have decided to just put up with it. I'm concerned about the ones who didn't feel comfortable that they could say anything. They just they got away from him and then just avoided him. But they couldn't. They didn't feel comfortable saying anything. And so it was a hostile atmosphere. Imagine somebody doing that to you and then you not being able to say anything, but he's not a predator towards you anymore, but you know what happened last time and you just avoid each other. Imagine the pit that's in your stomach that you go to work with every day.
Yeah, that's not right. And that's, I think generally speaking, right, over this whole thing with the last few months, there's going to be a lot of really good outcomes, I think, from this. A lot of really bad people going away, a lot of really good changes in the workplace, a lot of really good things that we maybe didn't notice or understand before that are coming to light that now we can address. And
hopefully
make sure
men
we take
won't
care.
Take this chance anymore.
Yeah.
Hopefully they won't
stop
feel entitled to do this stuff.
However, let me
That's a good safety tip. Never take a picture of your wiener.
Never. No.
Never.
Never.
Just don't do it.
Even if a doctor says to you,
right,
I want to take a picture of your wiener, say no.
Nope.
Yeah. In fact, if they... Even if it's an X-ray or
just say whatever happens.
You know
what?
If there's something broken in there, I just won't know.
If I've got cancer in there or something, it'll just fall off. Don't worry about it, Doc. It's not a problem.
More discussion about what parts of your body you should take pictures with coming up on Pat Gray Unleashed on the Blaze Radio and TV Network.
Glenn Beck.
We want to invite you to join us and become an abolitionist. This holiday season, we've just rescued our 100th slave from the slave trade in Syria and Iraq. We rescued 3 girls to bring us up to 100 from 17 to 4 years old was the youngest slave.
This is a huge problem, and it's one of those very few things that it seems like there's actual agreement with, no matter what political party you're in.
Yeah.
Saving victims of this stuff is really important work.
So the Nazarene Fund has upped its goal, and we would love for you to join us as an abolitionist. You could just donate $5 a month if you wanted, or make a donation to thenazarenefund.org, thenazarenefund.org, and help us save those slaves in the Middle East.
Glenn Beck.